Welcome back to part two, where we're joined again by Richard Cobsey. So Richard, we were going through the pipeline before from pain point to crowdsourcing to final solution, and we kind of cut it maybe just a little bit short. So when you get to the very ending where you have these winners of these contests, some solutions have been come up with, let's just keep it data science, machine learning. Let's say there was some algorithm or some model that was come up with. And you have these winners, and then you determine based on the accuracy or also certain just pieces of the solution and the code quality and all these different things. And then you want to actually internalize that at some point, because this is going to solve the actual business need. What does that look like once you get to that point where you've picked these winners and now it's time to actually like consume it or internalize it or whatever you want to call that?
So recall, earlier in the process, we talked about how do we decompose that problem. So now we've broken this thing down into subparts. We put it out to the crowd in contest form. And then now we got to pull it all back together. And typically what we do is try and focus on using the crowd to solve either a proof of concept hypothesis or what I call a core or kernel solution to what. Then everything else that would kind of be the wrapping around that. So if you think of it like a car, the crowd may build the engine, but then all the rest of the frame and the body.
So in this case, that might be something like software engineering. Is that going to be usually what that would look like for, let's say it's like a data science problem, or come up with a model for forecasting this, or come up with a model that will do a prediction or something. The wrapper would probably usually be like some kind of a dashboard or something around that.
Exactly. So it could be, the engine would be your model, whatever it is that's actually doing all the processing. And then everything else could be done in-house by developers, to make sure that it abides by our standards. So in that case, it would, the body of the car and the frame is what we do here. In some cases though, like a dashboard, we would still maybe put that out to the crowd for a design perspective.
Right? Okay.
But then how do we incorporate that and make it look and feel the way it should here?
Okay.
But a lot of our solutions, they're not all going to be integrated here into the Anadarko ecosystem as an application. Many of them are just, the customer just wants the algorithm or an improvement on an algorithm. So that's all we're going to get back. So in that case, there's no integration. It's just, here's the answer.
Okay.
Or if it's a design, then it's purely design.
Okay, but so if it is something that does need to get integrated, you will just take that core piece, have a few software engineers or whatever, and they'll integrate that. And then at that point, is the winner or the couple people that have got, let's say, first, second, third, so are they done at that point? That's the end of the road for them for that problem?
In some cases, yes. In some cases, no. Right. They may stick around for other projects. So because we're constantly, I have about 23 in flight currently as we speak.
Projects
or products, whatever. Uh-huh. But the other thing that we'll do, let's say the contest is done, but we have questions about something, or we have small little things, little tasks that need to be done. I'll create another contest. It's not really a contest, it's just a task.
Okay.
So contests or the challenges are many people competing. Then I'll go back to say the winner of a particular contest because I have a question about something, it'll just be a task that I pay them one time to do.
Okay.
And we're talking like $100, $500
okay.
to fix something, to modify the code.
Okay, sure.
So it may be, there also may be some back and forth. So as we're maybe trying to integrate it here, then we may have to go back to tweak it or make improvements, enhancements, that sort of thing. But so it's software development lifecycle. There's always, improvements going on.
Yeah, no, that totally makes sense. And then you'd even mentioned that there could be the potential possibility for people that are like winning or maybe even have won a few contests that you could potentially pull them in for you had mentioned the word a curated crowd.
Right. So the community that we access through the platform that we use is like 1.5 million people strong. That's the size of the community. And we have the ability to create a subset, which we call a curated crowd, if we needed to, you know, solve a problem that required them to be under NDA or perhaps temporarily have access to our system, we have that option available to us. We've used the curated crowd model or talent as a service for designs, in which case we had the cream of the crop from the crowd that we saw how they were performing from a design perspective. We've got, it's 12 of them, and they're isolated just to dedicate to us for a short amount of time. And we're running design challenges. So, look and feel for a user interface for a particular application. And we're able to turn those around in 24 hours. Okay. So it's still contests. So those 11 or 12 people are still competing against each other.
Okay.
And we're still getting multiple submissions, but we're focused on a smaller known group of individuals.
Or if you have private data or something, that would be another.
We could, yeah. That's where a lot of companies would use the curated crowd model. They've identified certain community members that provide good solutions, mm-hmm. and they will temporarily, under NDA, have them working on a more sensitive solution. Banks are using crowdsourcing. So and hospitals are using crowdsourcing.
Okay.
So there's certainly a lot of sensitive data in those two industries, right?
Yeah, I really do find that totally fascinating how that's such an interesting hybrid. It's not really, they're not an employee. It's still kind of, it's half gig, half employee. And we're going to revisit that and just kind of the future of how this is all going to play out for people. So I want to ask, how new is all this? Because this is, for me, this is kind of the first time I'm really hearing about this from this perspective of an actual large corporation leveraging one of these contest websites.
It's certainly not new. It's new in the oil and gas industry. I would dare to say that we are the only, or if not the only, one of the few oil and gas companies that's leveraging crowdsourcing to solve problems. But it's not new. I mean, the phrase crowdsourcing was coined in 2005. I believe some of the more prominent platforms out there for crowds have been up and running since 2007. So.
And being used by actual large corporations to solve in-house problems.
Absolutely. These are enterprise, these are platforms geared towards enterprise use. So, Starbucks, so you can probably, if you guess the companies that you would be more, in line for a different way of thinking, then you probably you'd guess, Starbucks and Amazon and that sort of thing.
You go and look and you'll find that they've been.
Yeah, they're using crowdsourcing and have been. NASA even is a huge, huge proponent of crowdsourcing.
Huh.
For even, CAD design.
When I first start to think about these things, when I first start to think, for instance, data science and machine learning, I think of who would do machine learning and data science problems on these websites, especially for a really challenging problem. Because you would think, this person would have to be pretty talented and intelligent and skilled enough to be able to beat all the other people on the internet who are doing these things. And they're skilled and talented in data science and machine learning. And then I just think, wouldn't these people all just be employed already? They wouldn't be sitting there on one of these websites, hitting refresh for a small monetary gig. They would be at their day job doing their daily work. And that's why when I first think of this, I think, you're not going to get any good solutions out of that because there wouldn't be these people on these websites to actually give you that.
I mean, it's actually the contrary, right? So you actually get access to very, highly skilled individuals this way. So these are the people that we're accessing. They're professors and students and, retired folks and people that have been doing this forever. People that are doing this as a hobby, people that are doing it to learn more. So there's already that interest. The fact that they're on there and they're interested, it's very different than taking something and assigning it to somebody. Just by the very nature that I've assigned them work to do means they may not necessarily be, that
motivated,
excited about doing it.
Yeah.
This is the opposite. So this is they're coming to the site and if they're attracted to it. So one good measure of that is if I put a task out there or a challenge and I get very little response rate, I know it's either not appropriate for the crowd or it's just not interesting enough.
Okay. Interesting.
So, because it's not just about the money. In a lot of cases, some of it's just like bragging rights. These guys get badges and that sort of thing. And it's they have their own sort of community, and they talk amongst themselves and help each other out. So
the more, that was kind of my first thought. And then the more, you know, that we've been talking about it and even talking about it now, the more I'm already totally even coming off of that thought, because I'm already starting to think, I wonder if there are any really interesting problems out there. Just fun, because most of the people I think that get into, let's say data science and machine learning, do get into it initially, at least in like right now, before maybe there was a massive wave where that may not still be 100% the case, but I think most people got into it because you were genuinely interested in the problems and modeling and all these things. And I could totally envision just, you know, looking out there for some of these problems, and like, and especially ones that you are particularly interested in. For instance, you had mentioned somebody who had solved one of the problems. Maybe, yeah, there's a person that's uniquely capable of solving one of these
problems. Yeah, and that individual, you know, from another country with a very specific domain expertise has a day job.
Yeah.
So they saw something out there, and it's, you know, I can solve this, and I can make, you know, $1,000 or whatever it is for very little effort. But for us, you know, it's also connecting that talent to the problem that we're trying to solve.
Right.
So for me, it's just been a really cool experience kind of engaging with this community.
Well, by the time we're done here, I'm going to be going this weekend and having some free time and be browsing these sites probably. So let's segue to some questions that maybe you can answer, maybe you can't answer. I'm starting to think about what the future of all this looks like. People are starting to use more and more of these gig economy, these contest websites and things, and you've already had all these great successes with it, it sounds like. So where does this go? Let's start with the person who is doing this, one of these people that is skilled and able to win these consistently, because you'd have to, can they make this into like a full-time career for themselves? Is that going to be one thing that happens? Are there going to be people that can just sustain fully and have, let's say, even a competitive wage that they're getting as, let's say, a data scientist, by just doing these gigs?
I mean, we have golfers that their entire living is made by playing a game. It is competitive. They're not guaranteed to win. We have, you know, folks that run marathons, same thing. So it's very, you know, it's similar yet different, but it's contest based.
It's riskier.
It's definitely riskier.
Because you have to win.
You have to win to get paid. But what you see is a lot of them, it builds upon, you know, they're continuing to build their skills because there's that drive, that motivation to win, because they have maybe a competitive nature about them. And that's why you're getting that top talent, because you're also getting that mentality. So to say, can somebody do it as a full-time job? Absolutely. Could everybody do it as a full-time job using the contest model? It's not for everyone, for sure.
Do you think you could have the same level of, maybe you could say maybe quality of life, but let's just say like pay, because the payouts are fairly small in the scheme of things for like a data science career.
I mean, again, I think it depends. So depending on the type of challenges that you're going after, you know, you could be tackling many different challenges, these contests, in a single day, if it's conducive to whatever domain you're working in. Okay. Data science ones, they tend to pay more because it's a more intricate challenge that we put out there, and they require a lot more time and dedication. Yeah. But that's the other thing is, for those long ones, I mentioned like a marathon match, there are these checkpoints, and they are also like pay points as well.
Okay. Okay.
So there's that incentive to, like, because you don't want to work on something for 4 weeks and you're not going to, you're not going to win.
Yep.
So at the checkpoint, everyone's kind of weighed and measured, and you see, all right, where do I stand relative to the crowd? Mm-hmm. Right. We're relative to my other marathon runners.
Right.
And then you can say, all right, I'm out. So you may have people drop off at that point because they realize there's just their trajectory towards the prize is not, you know, going to happen. But others are like, okay, I got a chance at this. And so then they get to the next checkpoint and it just goes from there.
Yeah. I'm just wondering, for somebody who's, let's say, starting out in their career, you know, if you're going to have to actually make this decision now, which path do I go? Do I go to a company internally, either a really long-term contract or full-time for however long, could be your whole life, or do I go this other path to the gig path, and that's going to be my whole career?
I mean, certainly an individual decision, but I would, here's one suggestion I would make is, you know, especially for a data scientist who maybe doesn't have a track record yet. So you've just graduated, and this is a great opportunity to start putting some things in your portfolio. Like, I've won this many data science challenges. Imagine, you know, if you won a Kaggle challenge, wouldn't you not exploit that?
Yeah, definitely.
So because you've solved a problem for other companies. Mm-hmm. So that's one advantage there for someone sort of up and coming. Or let's say you've just made a career shift and you're interested in data science. This is a great way to check out if it's interesting to you and if it's something that you have a knack for and the ability and skill set for. So, you know, could a data scientist do this full time? There, you could, I think, but it's definitely risky. It's not going to be, not everyone can be the top.
Is it fair to say, I'm going to stick one more time on this point. Is it fair to say that you will probably never get paid as much doing this type of work full time of just the gigs and the contests, but then maybe at the same time, you could have this life where you're like, whatever, traveling all over the place and just like keep your laptop on you and solve these every once in a while?
So we know that, you know, the way that people want to work is changing. You see the people wanting to work from home more often. You've got these companies like WeWork that are creating these little hubs where many different folks from different companies are going to work and that sort of thing. So we're already seeing that shift, and this is kind of in that same vein. I think you could certainly make enough money to live, but it's also a work-life balance thing. So if you could make more money, perhaps, you know, blood, sweat, and tears in a 9-to-5 job, but you're also doing, let's say, only 70% of what you're doing is what you love. You know, but that's a decision for each individual. Because if you're doing it through the gig economy, and it would probably be a hybrid of crowdsourcing and gig work. You know, you're living wherever you want. There's no chain to a certain thing. You're not having to file your weekly TPS report, you eliminate the things that you're not interested in and focus on what you love. But that's an individual thing currently. I think that it's still it's still evolving, this whole concept, but it's not going away. I promise you that.
Okay. That's not going away. What about internal data science jobs? Are those going to get completely replaced by the gig economy and the crowd? What does the future look like with all of this? Because now I'm starting to think, what percent of tasks are even going to be stay internal now? Is it slowly going to move to like 99% is now pushed to the crowd? Is it going to be like 1%? What does the whole future of all of this look like?
I mean, I think you've got these big thinkers out there trying to answer that exact question. Like, what is this going to look like in percentages and that sort of things? So I won't even venture a guess at that. I will say, it's not going to be this apocalyptic change, but it will be a change. There will be a shift. If we're focusing just on, the data science piece, again, this is just my opinion. No, it's not going to go away. You're still going to need to have your internal subject matter experts. And because even with data science, you need to have context as well. So there are certain aspects of data science that you can still go out to the crowd to where you don't, the context doesn't matter, but you need that. You need that subject matter expertise. And then we talked about this a little bit in the first segment. The crowd, the value there is that they can also augment your data science capabilities. Mm-hmm. So you can use them to enhance a model, or perhaps you don't have time to even bother with a model, put it out there, let somebody else solve it. And if they can't solve it, then you just keep moving on. But you're still working on what you're doing. And then you can, if they do solve it, great. Now you've got something else you can pull in and work on. So it's just the big change, I think, is just how we think and how we leverage this new, and I'm doing the air quotes thing,
right.
new concept of getting things done.
Yeah. But overall, would you say it's going to just keep probably increasing for the time being?
I think you're going to see. I think so. And it's going to vary by domain. So, folks that are in the more creative domain, I think, designers and, artists, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. I think that could all be in the gig economy, for example. Something like data science, it's going to be a mix, I think. Because you have your, you know, generalists and you have your specialists in everything. So,
all right. Well, thank you very much. That's going to wrap it up here. Thank you so much, Richard, for joining.
It was great.
And thank you for listening.